Good morning. You're listening to Island Life on Waiheke Radio. Chris Walker, your host here. So this morning, yeah, we've got something quite special, really. I've got Tim Moon in the studio with me. And Tim is, he's been on the show before. He's been here talking about archaeology. He's been here talking about Stony Batter. But this morning he's talking about a project he's been involved in, which is giving a new lease of life to an important piece of New Zealand's musical heritage, musical culture. And that's the Jesus I Was Evil EP from Darcy Clay. So we're going to talk to Tim in a moment. But first of all, let's take a listen to the iconic title track from that record.
I used to do lots of things.
Jesus, I Was Evil from Darcy Clay. So we've got the man who's responsible for putting out this record with us this morning. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning.
Just need to get you right in there by that microphone.
I love that track. It scratches your ears.
There you go. There we go. Now we've got you turned on and everything.
Kia ora, Chris. I was saying I love that track. It really scratches your ears. There's just something very special about the way Darcy recorded that.
It is, as I said in the intro, a kind of an iconic track, a piece of New Zealand, important piece of musical heritage, but now renewed interest. So tell us a little bit about why all this renewed interest. What's going on?
Yeah, well, really, Darcy, he was a self-defined artist, and through breaking Jesus I Was Evil, he became cult status. And here we are celebrating 20 years since his passing. He died in 1998. Yeah, he died in 1998. So, you know, we're commemorating him again. And it really shows that he is timeless, and that's an element of his musical genius.
So I was just playing the new 12-inch release of that. So we've got the Jesus I Was Evil EP on side one, and then the second EP, rolling with Beethoven?
That was from the Blur support, when Blur were touring in New Zealand. So essentially what we've done here is we've taken Darcy's full output of music. He recorded 5 songs in his bedroom, 1 song in a studio, and then he supported the Blur tour of New Zealand, and we recorded off the desk there. So we've put that together to create an entire album of everything that he ever produced.
So you've been behind this reissue, but you were there back in the day as well.
BFM broke this artist. I heard this track being played on the campus radio network. I thought he was like a King Missile artist. I definitely didn't think he was from New Zealand. A friend invited me to a party at her house and said, "You've got to meet this guy," introduced me to Darcy Clay. And we were just mates from that moment on, and we developed our recording relationship. My business partner, Trevor Reiki, we own Pagan Records and Antenna Recordings, signed him. Even the signing was quite an eccentric process. Darcy wrote his own contract, and we accepted whatever he wanted.
So those days when you had Pagan and Antenna, the late 90s, I suppose that was kind of like the dying days of the physical release of music.
Well, we actually achieved a lot. We really went for niche marketing in that Pagan was quite clearly established working with adult style artists, country, folk, rock, and then Antenna was set up to work with more pop culture genres, and Darcy fitted into that pop culture genre that's a sort of like a country punk, but we also had dub dance, electronica, and other artists on the Antenna label.
So that went on for a while. I mean, but it's all, once we got into kind of downloading and all the rest of it, must have been, what, early 2000s, it all started to fade away?
Yeah, that's very good. Yeah, Trevor and I made a business decision in 2005. There was a lot of piracy happening, and we knew we couldn't control that and resolve that issue. That was something for the industry to deal with. We decided to shift our entire catalogue and make it available on the internet. So rather than trying to stop people accessing it, we increased their access to it. And that went out on digital platforms, digital downloadable platforms, transactionable platforms. And I think in just a space of about 2 or 3 years, we ended up being on about 400 platforms around the world. Now, what that did is that shifted from physical sales to digital sales, and then delivered royalties back to our artists.
So you've kind of kept in the game doing that, but did you envisage a time when you'd be back into physical releases, particularly vinyl releases?
Well, the really nice thing now is it's kind of a luxury that we have. We have a really large back catalogue, including the Darcy Clay repertoire. A lot of companies are interested in putting them into compilations or reissuing them. So in this situation, Sony came to us and said, "Look, we're really interested in reissuing Darcy Clay's work." And the requirement we had was, well, if you do that, we'd just like you to do it on vinyl also, because we really think that's about the collector side. And vinyl's tactile. It's like owning a really beautiful book. You look after it, you share it with people. And whereas a CD is really ephemeral now.
So talk us through the process of, you make that decision, you go, okay, here we go, we've got these recordings which were pretty roughly recorded back in the day, put out on CD originally, and, someone comes along and goes, okay, we've got this idea, we're going to do this. How do you take that from go to woe?
Yeah, well, there's mechanisms in place to deal with that, and there's some simple licensing agreements. So a company will approach us, they've got a concept, they're wanting to put out a collection of, say, New Zealand music or some particular genres of hits. We then negotiate a royalty arrangement. They take over all the manufacturing, distribution and marketing in that situation, and we simply receive a licensing royalty for it. So it's actually a better position because you have no overheads in that process. That's how it operates. And then it extends through to international compilations, film, television, etc. And in fact, Darcy Clay's lead track, Jesus, I Was Evil, was actually selected for a film called I Woke Up Early the Day I Died, which is the last Ed Wood script. Billy Zane was producing that, and somehow he'd come across Darcy's material. Possibly Darcy had sent it to him direct. And, he was completely devastated to hear that the artist had passed only a couple of weeks before approaching us to put it in his film.
Yeah, so, I suppose that's one of the things and all the excitement around this. It shouldn't be forgotten. You know, there's a tragedy there that, you know, someone with a talent was gone too quickly.
Yes, that's right. And the irony there too is because at the Blur concert, he did his rendition of Elton John's English Rose. And, you know, there's a message in that.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, Sony come along, they say, hey, we want to do this. You go, okay, we're going to put it on vinyl. Now, this has formed a kind of bit of a raft of reissues from Sony.
Yeah, I think it opened their eyes to the fact that, you know, music these days is really, really about a tight niche market. Reissuing on vinyl has special interest. Generally, the vinyl sells out quite quickly and, you know, it's quite expensive compared to a CD. What I'm really looking for, though, in these sort of vinyl reissues is to breathe life back into the repertoire, because a DJ or a producer will find a sample on that record that they would like to use, and that just it's a continuing journey for the music.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've done a beautiful job of this. I mean, it's sounding great, and I know you've been excited about it. You came up here with the test pressing a little while ago, and now the final product's out. It's got great gatefold sleeve and, you know, really done a nice job of it. So you've got a renewed excitement about doing some more of this?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a fairly large back catalogue. This situation with Darcy is what it is, but we're going to go on and release some other artists on vinyl. Again, it's as I said, it's breathing life back into the repertoire. You know, CDs are a technology that's starting to disappear. Everybody's streaming. It's great to put a record on.
So, you know, Sony, huge international company, and, you know, even a top-selling New Zealand record for them is really just a drop in a bucket internationally in terms of things. You know, if they put out, I don't know, 500 copies of Beck Runge's Drive on vinyl. I mean, I'm surprised anyone would even notice, you know, compared to some of the artists they cover. But for Pagan and Antenna, I suppose these things in scale are a little more kind of, you know, they actually might generate some income.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Record labels are really the boutique end of the industry. So the major distributors, you know, they are what they are. They're a big machine, a big distributor. But their repertoire, the music is fed to them through the little creative art houses, the record labels in people's bedrooms, the record labels in South Auckland and West Auckland. And that really, that's how it's functioning. You know, I'm not really quite sure how the music industry is going to reform itself. It's an outdated business model. It's been under attack for a very, very long time in terms of protecting its copyright and controlling distribution and so forth. But something new has to shake out of it. At the moment, it's an expanding share of a diminishing market. These large companies merge, and by merging, they gain a bit more of a market. But at the end of the day, it's a market that's well on its way out.
So you talked about doing more. Do you have specific projects in mind?
Well, you know, we'd like to do Relax-O-Matic. We did two albums with Relax-O-Matic and you know, it's a very cool sound. So we're talking to the band about that. Another artist or another band of ours was a band called Tadpole. Tadpole were a sort of a pop rock with a little bit of a DJ thing mixed in with it. Their first album, The Buddha Finger, sold maybe 150,000 units. We produced 13 music videos off that album. So it was really, really successful. 2000 through 2005-ish. That would make a very, very good reissue. We're looking at that. And there's other repertoire too. We did a recording project some time ago of spoken word. We're thinking about going and talking to the poet about reissuing that and putting that out on vinyl also.
So Tadpole's a name I haven't heard for a very, very long time.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they were a very successful band, they were very current. They appealed to youth. They were very well managed. They ran they did a lot of gigs through New Zealand high schools. They locked into a market really, really well. And as I said, we did 13 music videos off that album, so that's essentially 13 singles. That's pretty well unheard of.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there really was a time there, wasn't there, I think, you know, the late 90s, the early 2000s, you know, with that New Zealand on-air support, where there was that huge explosion of New Zealand music. I read an article about it recently, just looking at the number of New Zealand tracks that were charting compared to now, where it's just dropped right away again.
Yeah, that's right. We were very active in that process. Trevor Reiki, Cheryl Morris and myself set up some radio syndication, and the dilemma we had was that about 5% of the music music played on commercial radio stations in New Zealand was New Zealand music. 95% was foreign music. We designed these shows that went out on rock formats, CHR formats, and etc., to profile New Zealand music. And together with Brendan Smythe from New Zealand On Air, we had a very, very clear strategy over 6 or 7 years to expand that share. And eventually we got to 20% content, which is a good situation. But I always think you need to look at the reverse of that. That's still 80% foreign music.
Yeah, great times and some great music that's come out of there, I think. And I suppose a lot of it, as you say, is just kind of sitting there in the vaults. You know, people might have it. I mean, I've got thousands of bloody CDs at home that I never play with, you know, some of that music on there, or it's sitting in the vaults in someone's warehouse somewhere. And to get it out there.
But that's also a dilemma. You've got to be very careful you don't lose track of your masters. You know, once the master's gone, if it gets misplaced, if a warehouse closes down for some reason and they lose a carton that's got some important masters in it, it's gone forever.
Yeah. So, I mean, was there a time away from music in between, or has it been there right through?
Are you talking about myself personally?
Yeah.
No, I've had many, many careers, and I started, my musical career started in copyright law. I set up AMCOS and APRA in New Zealand and ran those for many, many years, controlling intellectual property right and an entire world repertoire of music. But my personal interests really lie in archiving and knowledge. Music was the art, the intellectual satisfaction I get from archaeology, and I retrained in archaeology, and I run projects around the world.
Yeah. Well, it's been great to have you in, Tim, and you know, this really is a fantastic product, and again, I think because it's attached to an artist who is so important, it's nice to have that recognition. Darcy, well, Daniel, wasn't it?
Daniel Bolton.
Yeah. So his family, it's survived him?
Yeah, no, he has a really lovely family. I know one of his brothers quite well, and we had an interesting connection even, you know, after Darcy passing. His parents, Bob and Kath, are wonderful people. It's taken them a long time to really, you know, sort of resolve what happened with their son. And, you know, there's a lot of respect there. We work very, very closely. And putting together a compilation such as this. Actually, I do have a request. I really would like you to play English Rose.
I wrote this one not so long ago. It's called English Rose. Called out to our country. Bold move.